The House will now have under consideration House Bill 256. Gentleman from 5.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request unanimous consent to dispense with the further reading of House Bill 256.
Mr. Speaker, I object.
There is an objection. The clerk will read. Gentleman from 5 to open debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker and members of the body, this idea regarding the changes to how we reimburse school districts on transportation costs has been around, I think, since about early January, possibly even sooner. It was part of Superintendent Luna's ideas that he had put forward and how he would move forward to cut $62 million out of his education budget. So nothing new. It's an idea, as I said, it's been around since early January, and there's been a lot of discussions about this piece of legislation, but I would like to talk about the changes we're making to it. And members of the House, I had passed out a couple of sheets you should all have on your desk. One of them's got some blue and yellow ink on it. It lists all the school districts in the state of Idaho. There's another sheet that at the top of it is entitled School District Enrolled Students Per Square Mile, and I might refer to those a couple times as we go through this debate, Mr. Speaker, members of the body. But there's basically three components to this legislation. The purpose is to reduce cost and promote efficiency in public school transportation systems. While pupil transportation system remains an important part, necessary component of Idaho's public school system, it must also be acknowledged that transportation costs represent overhead costs. And this I want the body to remember, that each dollar spent on transportation is a dollar that cannot make it into the classroom. And that's where we'd like to get most of the money if we could in education, is into the classroom. That's where education takes place. In these tough times, it's essential that all overhead costs be scrutinized, and that's what we're trying to do in House Bill 256. The legislation does three things, basically. The first thing is it eliminates reimbursement for field trips. Mr. Speaker, we don't bring this lightly. We realize, and I think every member of this body realizes, that field trips are an extension of the classroom. But in these tough economic times, we don't have a lot of options. I think if this legislation were to move forward, it will help us reduce the amount of cuts we're going to have to look at in teacher salaries. So we're trying to spread out the pain, so to speak, Mr. Speaker, so it doesn't all come in the form of teacher salaries, but some of it comes in the form of transportation costs and other legislation you'll see moving forward. So $2.5 million of the savings of the $4.2 million in this bill, if it were to pass, comes by the elimination of reimbursement for field trips. And, Mr. Speaker, and members of the body, I would bet you a dollar to donuts that I would be bracing Superintendent Luna down the hall to Legislative Services in the hopefully not too distant future to redo this legislation so when times are better, we will bring back reimbursement for field trips. But at this time, Mr. Speaker, it's just money that isn't there. The second thing this bill does is it requires high population density school districts be measured based on cost per student rider for the purposes of the pupil transportation cost. And I hope some of the members of this body that have been here longer than I can speak to this, but when this transportation formula was put into effect years ago, school districts had a choice. And the choice was given to the local districts that they could be reimbursed by one of two methods. One method would be a cost per mile, and it was the legislature's intent at that time that those would be very rural districts. We understand that very rural districts have a lot of miles to cover, don't always fill up their buses. The second part of the transportation reimbursement formula was you could be reimbursed on a per pupil, a per student, per rider method of the buses. And that was the legislature's intent that then the high-density districts would use that method. They have shorter routes to run, they fill their buses up, and although those two choices really were given to the local school districts, this legislation will change that and say that the high density districts will have to use the per student rider method of reimbursement. And if you want to know what that number is, members of the House, if you would refer to the handout that says school districts enrolled students per square mile that's passed out, you can go down to your school district somewhere on this two-page, two-and-a-half-page handout, and the number is above 20 students. And so if you just looked at the top at the Aberdeen School District number 58 and go over to the last three columns, square miles, the enrollment, and then you divide the enrollment by the square miles, you have 2.66 students enrolled per square mile. Obviously, Aberdeen is nowhere as close to that 20 number. But you can run down and see. Let's just look at the Caldwell District. Doesn't change anything for the Caldwell District, a very large school district. They're already up at 287, well above the 20 threshold. But I thought that that would be helpful for the body so they could see how it would affect their own school district. Thirdly, Mr. Speaker, this legislation reduces the state reimbursement match from 85% to 50% for all but State Department of Education assessment and fees, bus purchases and maintenance. Again, I'll repeat that. 85% reimbursement will stay in effect for all school districts for the assessments, the fees that the department charges to assess the local district's buses, and for bus purchases and maintenance on buses. Mr. Speaker, members of the body, we realize that safe buses are a very important issue, that we're safely transporting our students in good, maintained buses. That's why this legislation maintains that reimbursement rate at 85%. The dollars saved into a pupil, then what we're doing with the difference between the 85 and the 50 is we're taking $23.5 million and we're funneling that to the districts in the form of district block grants. So school districts will be kept whole in this reimbursement formula from 85 to 50. And Mr. Speaker, I can give some examples, and I think it would be helpful for the body if I ran through a couple of examples so we know how this reimbursement will move forward, because that seems to be some controversy amongst the bill, and when you haven't looked at it closely or run these calculations, it can look alarming on the surface. It just says the state's going to cut reimbursements from 85% to 50%. Well, again, as I said in my opening remarks, the purpose is to make districts be as efficient as possible. You know, Mr. Speaker, right now, if a district is efficient and looking towards greater efficiencies in their transportation budgets, they're able to save a dollar next year in an efficiency. Under the current law, that school district only gets to keep 15 cents of that dollar because the state was reimbursing at 85 cents on that dollar. Well, members of the body, if this legislation were to pass and a district can continue to find more efficiencies in their transportation costs, they're then going to be able to keep 50 cents on each dollar instead of 15 cents. I repeat that. The districts will be able to keep 50 cents on every dollar they save instead of 15 cents, or more than three times the amount of money. And we think in times like this that efficiencies are very important to look to. Again, we want to try to get dollars into the classroom. But regarding the reimbursement rate, for fiscal year 2010, the State Department of Education would calculate the amount of money lost to each individual district through dropping the reimbursement rate for most pupil transportation costs from 85% to 50%. The difference would be distributed to each district as a block grant, meaning no district will lose any funding in fiscal year 2010. The transportation block grant would be applied to any pupil transportation costs first, but could be used for discretionary purposes if not needed for pupil transportation. Again, I get to the savings part of it. If these districts can become more efficient, can save a little bit more money, that savings then can be used in other parts of the school district's budget and get into discretionary purposes. I think that's a good part of this bill. Well, then we get for future fiscal years, past 2010. What we'll do under this legislation is the FY 2010 block grant would be converted to a per support unit amount for each district. Per support unit, members of the body, remember, are basically classrooms. So here's a couple of examples. School District A had a block grant of $85,000 in FY 10 and had 50 support units, 50 classrooms. We would divide the support units by the $85,000, and we'd have $1,700 per support unit going out past fiscal year 2010. Well, let's look at a different school district that had the same amount of support units but higher transportation costs. So we'll look at School District B. They had a block grant of $100,000. Remember, District A had $85,000. Same support unit, though, members, 50 support units. We divide the 50 by the $100,000. $2,000 per support unit. So the districts that have the same support units but might have higher transportation costs are kept whole going in the out years. Now, in fiscal year 2011, we'll multiply each district new units. This accounts for growth, increased enrollment. We will multiply each district's new units by their FY10 per unit distribution. School District A, we talked about, they have 52 units now. Remember in my first example, they had 50 units. So they've grown. They've got 52 units. It's $1,700 a unit, $88,400. The first example, they were getting $85,000. So we are accounting in this legislation for growth in support units. Now let's look at FY11 in District B. District B was the district with the 50 units, but the higher cost at $100,000. Well, what's happened in District B in FY11? They have dropped a support unit because they've got decreasing enrollment, but remember their costs were higher to begin with, so we used a higher divisor, and so now 49 units instead of 50 units, but a $2,000 per support unit reimbursement, they get $98,000. So they have lost $2,000, but they've lost a complete support unit, which is basically a classroom. So this legislation is flexible if we grow in support units or we lose in support units, if we grow in enrollment or we shrink in enrollment. So now we need to determine the percent change in statewide transportation reimbursements less statewide enrollment change. Since FY2010, we want to take in inflation into this legislation. So transportation reimbursement increased 5%. Now 1% of that, Mr. Speaker, is attributable to growth in enrollment. So we would take out the 1% because that was growth in enrollment. We would have a 4% net increase in transportation costs. And then in the out years, we would adjust the amount slated for distribution under example 4, again, going past FY2010, by the net percentage in number 5, which was the inflation in transportation costs. We all understand that transportation costs aren't stagnant. They will go up. The price of fuel goes up. The price of tires go up. The price of buses go up. There are increases and there are inflation. So School District A increased $88,400 by 4% to $91,936. School District B, which had a drop in support units of 1, we still get to apply the 4% inflation factor to that school district, and their funding in the out year 2011, where it was $98,000, goes up with the inflation factor to $101,920. I think, members of the body, we're trying to be fair to all the school districts. We're trying to come up with a formula that will drive efficiencies in school districts. We want to try to keep dollars in the classroom. Again, any dollar spent on transportation cost is a dollar that's not getting into the classroom. Now, Mr. Speaker, as this legislation does change, the part that says if you're a high-density district and in the past you've been able to use either method, the method for per pupil reimbursement or per mile reimbursement, I would refer back to the sheet I handed out that's got the yellow and blue ink on it. And you'll notice that right there on the front page, Mr. Speaker, up at the top, we're showing the $1.5 million savings in the density feature, where we are then requiring the high-density districts to use the per-pupil method. And if you would look then when we start into the school districts, and this is, you know, just the way it's going to happen if this legislation moves forward, is the district that's getting hurt the worst by this $1.5 million savings to the state is the Boise district. You can see out of that $1,542,793 savings that $1,428,251 of that is attributable to the Boise school district. Now, for some of you other members of the body that are in large school districts or any members of the body, no matter where your school district lies, you can page through this sheet and you can kind of see how it affects all the districts. I would say, Mr. Speaker, that as you look through there, the districts in blue, because they're black and blue, the districts in blue are the districts that have more than 20 students enrolled per square mile of that school district. So there is why you have the blue and the blacks. The districts in blacks are below the 20 students enrolled per square mile of district. The districts in blue are those districts above the 20. And so, you know, you can pick out your district and go see how it might affect your district. As you can see, if I'm on page four, the other district that it's going to affect is the Lewiston School District, District 340. There will be a loss to the Lewiston School District of $30,000. So very minimal there. And then, members of the body, if you would flip over to the last page, you will see the additional savings. The additional savings are in a number of charter schools. And the reason that is, members, is those charter schools are all located in the high-density districts. So, again, the charter schools are going to have to follow the same rules here, that if they're in a high-density district, they're only going to be reimbursed on the per-student method. And then, members, just to conclude, in the legislation on page 5 of the legislation, and I'm in section 33.5208 that begins at the bottom of page 4, you see we are adding some new language in the reimbursements for charter schools, and I'm about in the middle of page 5, Mr. Speaker. Actually, line 23 is new language. The student resides within 15 miles of the public charter school by road. The reason we're doing that is there are some charter schools that go considerably outside that 15-mile radius to pick up students, and we had to draw the line somewhere. Again, members of the House, this legislation, if it moves forward, will save the state about $4.1 million or so, and that equates to 0.5% in teacher salaries. We're trying to spread this out so it isn't all on the backs of the teachers. We think this is a good piece of legislation. I would ask for your green light. Mr. Speaker, debate is open.
Is there further debate? Gentleman from 7.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to say that I think that this is an unnecessary bill. And it's the first, likely, of several we'll see that will be cuts in public education funding in the money that goes to our kids' education. This bill is unnecessary based on what we agreed to do yesterday. Mr. Speaker, may I refer to other legislation?
Without objection, the gentleman may refer to other legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday we passed House Bill 252. We passed it out of here unanimously. It was a lot of work. It took a lot of time. And for the stakeholders and the others that participated in it, it was an immense amount of work, and they should feel justifiably proud of that. The process was there to evaluate this question. It was placed on the table, and it was taken off the table as not being necessary based on the input of all of those stakeholders. That's why I say it's an unnecessary bill. I think it may well be an affront to those stakeholders who worked so hard, gave so much time, trying to reach a collaborative approach that works well for the students and the schools of Idaho. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure you'll hear more from others in our caucus and hopefully from others in the body about what this means to the school districts, but I have concerns. I have concerns about this, what this bill does, potentially for the safety those children who are transported. I have concerns what it does for the educational opportunities through field trips and others. And while there is assurance that we'll come back in the good times and replace it, this bill has no sunset. So, Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the body to recognize that this bill is not needed and reject it. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Lady from 7.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To debate against the bill, I would like to request unanimous consent to suspend Rule 22.
We've already suspended that.
Thank
in
you.
Referring to other bills.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good ladies and gentlemen of the House, House Bill 256 is both unnecessary and unfair to all three of the school districts that are in my legislative district. The good gentleman from District 5 spoke appreciatively of the work that was done collaboratively with all of the stakeholders at the table to craft House Bill 252, and for that I do thank him. The meetings were most mornings at 7 o'clock, not an unreasonable hour, but still requiring extra effort to be on time and prepared to contribute to the process. The dedication and belief in what and why we were working on this legislation was evidenced by the almost daily participation by everyone. When we had morning meetings on Fridays, I have to admit to you that I was tired, but I so believed in what we were doing, providing the flexibility and the tools for local school districts to work with all employees to continue to provide a stable educational environment for Idaho's children, that my tiredness was inconsequential compared to our goals. When House Bill 256, which reduces the reimbursement funding for school transportation, was introduced in the Education Committee, I felt blindsided. Am I perceived to be so naive as to think that my input is really of value? All the tools necessary for local school districts to address this and any future catastrophic financial emergencies were contained in House Bill 252. So why is House Bill 256 needed? The other question that needs to be answered is, why wasn't the same deliberative process used for this bill? The answer was that it was all about timing. With all due respect, I cannot accept that answer. I'd like to give you an example of how House Bill 256, which also includes eliminating field trips, will impact Idaho students' learning experience. If you haven't prepared for a field trip for students, it might be difficult to understand and imagine how much more work and attention to detail is required than having students in class. Nothing can be left to chance. Not student safety, not food preparation, not methods of instruction that match the Idaho standards, not appropriate chaperone preparation, nothing. A teacher in the Lewiston School District called me 2 weeks ago. She was very excited. She had received not one, but two governor's grants. Any of you who have had the experience of writing grants or been involved in grant writing know that this is exceptional. She is an exceptional teacher. However, one of the components of the grant was a field trip that comprised a number of teaching stations. If House Bill 256 were to pass, she would be unable to fulfill that portion of the grant, which calls into question whether the entire grant would then be in jeopardy, not to mention the loss of the learning experience for the students. In addition, this is very unfair to school districts in that transportation reimbursement is paid the next year for the previous year's expenses. Reducing the reimbursement, and I am using information from my local district superintendents, from 85 to 50%, the Lewiston School District would not be reimbursed for $425,000 and would not be reimbursed for $59,000 for field trips. The Lapway School District would not be reimbursed for $8,500 in field trips. And the Cul-de-Sac School District would not be reimbursed for $3,200 for field trips. How are our rural school district to survive with these kinds of decisions? House Bill 252 provided all of the tools for local school districts to make good decisions that address local financial needs. And taking that away seems to be micromanaging local district finances, and that I cannot agree to do. I ask you, on behalf of the three school districts, children, parents, teachers, and district patrons that I represent, not to support House Bill 256. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Gentleman from 18.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to debate in opposition to the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's really important that we sit and think about what we're doing right now. We are taking an unprecedented step to cut public education for the first time in Idaho's history. Let that sink in, folks. the first time in Idaho's history, we want to cut public ed. We've got hundreds of millions of dollars in stabilization funds sitting around, but we want to cut public education. There's three reasons that I object to House Bill 256. The first is an issue of need. Do we need to do this? Beyond the mechanical reasons that would suggest that we don't, with the passage of House Bill 252, which has already been expanded upon, so I won't take the time to belabor that point. The other question is, if we have the money in the bank, why would we go through the unprecedented step of cutting transportation and field trips from our students? We've got the money, folks. We said when we put money into those accounts that they are for a rainy day. I don't know how much more rain that we want, but it seems to me that if this isn't enough rain, we might as well start building our ark and wait for Noah to come before we're willing to use it. We don't need to do this. The superintendent said so himself 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We don't need to do this, folks. Second issue, it's a matter of fairness. In what kind of event or what kind of life experience would we change the rules of the game after they'd already been played? Would we tell a basketball team that we're sorry, you weren't allowed to have someone over 6'10 play, so any points that they scored don't count? In effect, that's what we're doing today with House Bill 256. By changing the rules of the way that school districts are reimbursed for field trips after they've already taken those field trips, we're asking them to hold the bag and tell them, sorry, we didn't tell you that we were going to change those rules, but we have. In your local district, if they have taken field trips this year in the 08-09 calendar year for schools, they will not be reimbursed. They have expected to be reimbursed, but they will not be if this bill passes. That's completely unfair. That's a burden that we're placing on our schools, we're placing on our kids, and that's something that we shouldn't be able to support. The final point is probably the most important, and that's a matter of safety. House Bill 256 puts children's safety at risk. House Bill 256 puts children's safety at risk. In District 15, there is a bus route that goes about 8/10 of a mile. The reason that route exists is because there's a major intersection and a major rail line that goes through the middle of the subdivision. In order to access the school, the students would have to go over the major intersection and they'd have to go over the major rail line to get to school. Under the proposed changes, the school district would be required to drop the busing for that particular situation and put those children at risk. We've heard debate about we want to keep dollars in the classroom, and I couldn't agree more. But the fact of the matter is, if a child's not getting to school because they're getting hit by a bus or a train on the way there, it doesn't matter how much money we have. We must protect our students. Passing House Bill 256 put children's safety at risk. Please vote no on House Bill 256 for the reasons that I outlined. Number one, there's no need to do this today. Number two, this is an issue of fairness. And finally, there's a serious safety concern that will manifest itself if this bill passes. Don't take my word for it. Ask the school administrators, ask your school boards, ask your teachers. They will tell you what I'm saying is right. They have all opposed this bill, and they do not support House Bill 256, and I hope you won't either.
Is there further debate? Gentleman from 27.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would the good gentleman from District 18 stand for a question?
Will the gentleman from 18 yield?
As I said earlier, I always yield.
The gentleman yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good gentleman, as I look at this handout that was passed out by the good gentleman from 5, the so-called yellow and blue one, it looks to me like that the current practices as employed by the Boise Independent School District are taking $1.428 million that would otherwise be distributed to the other school districts as as discretionary dollars. I know that you're the representative of that school district, and I was wondering if there's a good justification why the Boise School District should continue to reimburse on a per mile basis as opposed to the cost per mile or cost per student. Because it looks to me like that's a little unfair. Can you help me with that?
Mr. Speaker, good gentlemen, first of all, I don't represent the Boise School District. I leave that to the trustees at the Boise School District to represent our district. But it is true that I represent the attendance area in the state legislature for them, so just a point of clarification there. In terms of the issue of fairness, I think it's a great question. If you look at a historical analysis of the cost of ridership with the Boise School District, costs have gone down in the Boise School District in excess of the declining enrollment. Why has that happened? It's because we've wanted to become more efficient. We've said, hey, we want to save as much money as we can getting our kids to school, but we also want to do it as safely as possible. What I understand that District 27 may not understand is we've got some different circumstances in an urban area. We've got higher traffic volumes. We've got larger trains. Those things bisect what are otherwise suburban and metropolitan areas that you don't see in other parts of the state. So are the constraints that we deal with different? Absolutely. So we have to assess those things, because I don't think anyone in this body would say a child that lives in any part of the state is more important than a child that lives in Boise, and we wouldn't say otherwise. And so we want to make sure that all of our children are safe, and that's what we've done to make sure that happens in the Boise School District.
Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman from 27.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to debate in favor of the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would remind the body that this school district is the same district that let me rephrase here. In 2003, when was the last time that the state of Idaho took a serious look and made some serious changes as to the way the school districts are reimbursed as for transportation? And what was glaring at that time was that there were some school districts, and it was just intuitive that it would ought to be cheaper to haul kids to and from school in school districts that are more urban, where there's more students per square mile. Now, granted, we in rural Idaho don't understand anything or everything, but we do understand economies of scale, and that we believe that those economies can be captured when it comes to transporting kids to and from school in places like the Boise Independent School District. And there were some tactics employed back in that era that came to light. And of course, with the passage of the legislation in 2003, they were no longer able to employ those tactics, and we have a much fairer approach now than we did then. And I'm assuming that this handout that we have in front of us now is a that at least of the $1.5 million that will be saved through these changes, $1.4 million of those will come from one school district. And I don't mean to pick on any school district at all, but to the extent that their practices have an impact on the balance of the school districts, and as you go down through each of these school districts, you'll see some school districts are way below the state average, Mr. Speaker, and that they're already doing a good job. And I think that the other components of this bill, through the block granting and through it's too bad that this block grant wasn't in place in 2003, because as these school districts have driven those costs down, those savings would have been realized at the school district level, and that those monies could have been spent for other discretionary purposes at the school district level. But as you go down through there are many of these school districts are below the state average, and most are doing a good job. And we all know that we have a finite size of the pie, and when it has to be sliced where one school district or many school districts or a handful of school districts get a disproportionate share of that, that costs the other school districts. Now, I would applaud the presentation of the good gentleman from District 5. There's been a lot of thought that's gone into this legislation and as to whether it was not included in as we formulated or as the group formulated House Bill 252, that is for those that were in the room to decide that. And I expect to hear from them later. But on the face of it, just from a complete fairness perspective, if there is one school district that is using everybody else's money to be in, because they're being reimbursed by the mile in an area where it ought to be, where it should be the very cheapest in the state to transport students, that smacks of unfairness to me, Mr. Speaker. And to the extent that this bill addresses that, I'm in support of that.
Gentleman 14.
Mr. Speaker, I would move that the House recess until the hour of 1:30.
Mr. Speaker, I second the motion.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion is carried, and the House stands recessed until 1:30 p.m.